Psalm 67, verses 3 and 4a read, "Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy." Hello, and welcome back to Think This Way. This is the podcast of Faith Bible Church. I am your host. My name is Pastor Bryce. Today, we're continuing our quarterly focus on missions. And if you heard last week's episode, you heard me talk about definitions, what God's mission is without an S, and how that relates to missions, carrying out God's mission across cultural boundaries. So now that we're past definition, the next several weeks on this podcast, I want to spend time thinking about motivations for missions. And I don't know, for you, maybe missions is something you've considered your whole life. You've been heavily involved on the sending end of things. Maybe you've given serious consideration to going and becoming a long-term missionary. Or it's possible that that's just not been on your radar and you've been focused elsewhere. Well, no matter what the case has been, we're going to have a very good quarter of getting our focus onto missions and honestly asking God what part he wants us to play in bringing the gospel across cultural and geographical boundaries to other people. And so I do want to spend time before we get into details of how we send and how we go, talking about why we should be interested in missions. Some of you don't need the why, you already know, and you're passionate, which is a great blessing in the local church, and may it always be so. And then for others, there's the need for reminder of why missions ought to be significant, even if there are pressing things in your lives, which almost certainly there are, immediate things, family things, work things. All of us have to keep a focus on God's larger purpose in this world, which includes bringing the gospel to the ends of the earth. And we are a part of that. And we don't have the option to opt out of that. So we are a part of that. And we want to be excited about that. I was talking to someone the other day. When it comes to missions, much like evangelism, and I guess somewhat like prayer, these are subjects that are heavily guilt-inducing because I think all of us feel we can do better. And when life gets busy, those often are the first things that fall to the wayside. And so we're going to try not to be hugely guilt-inducing this quarter. I mean, the goal primarily this quarter is to get our focus rejuvenated, to put it back on to missions. And so to that end, I wanted to start today by talking about the most important motivation for missions that there is. The very bottom of the bottom of all motivations undergirding all missions that we undertake to pray for, to support, or to do by going. And I've titled this episode, "Missions Exist Because Worship Doesn't." And probably a number of you know that I am quoting John Piper when I say that. Let me give you the paragraph from John Piper's book, Let the Nations Be Glad. And I should say that this is probably one of the most important paragraphs written in the history of missions. I don't know if that's too exaggerated. I know there was someone I was reading who talked about when they were looking for a good book on missions, they asked a number of respected seminary level or Bible college level professors of missiology what books they recommended, and he said on every single one's list was Let the Nations Be Glad by John Piper. And this is the paragraph that starts chapter one of the book. I knew about this paragraph before I'd ever read the book or started reading the book because it was quoted, part of it was quoted in a Christian hip-hop song that I was familiar with. So this is a very influential paragraph and it's powerful, and you can see why. And Piper here is getting to the very core of why we ought to be motivated to be involved in missions. Here's what he says. Missions is not the ultimate goal of the church. Worship is. Missions exist because worship doesn't. Worship is ultimate, not missions, because God is ultimate, not man. When this age is over, and the countless millions of the redeemed fall on their faces before the throne of God, missions will be no more. It is a temporary necessity, but worship abides forever. That is a very powerful paragraph. It certainly resonates with my heart and helps to ignite a fire for why we should be involved in missions. And amazingly, it does that by minimizing missions, or rather putting missions in their proper place. Even for those of you listening who maybe you have a special calling into missions work, this may be an integral part of your life. You believe everyone else ought to be more excited about missions, and you are right about that. Even if that's the case for you, what's amazing is in this paragraph, Piper rightly takes missions off the top shelf. He says it's not the most important thing. And he puts it on the second shelf. And on the top shelf, he puts worship. And although it's counterintuitive, it seems like the way to motivate people to do missions is make it the most important thing in life. There is this sort of counterintuitive approach that's biblical that Piper is taking to say, no, the most important thing in life is not missions. It's not domestic ministries of reaching the homeless here. It's not going across cultural boundaries, geographic or national or ethnic boundaries. None of those are the most important thing. The most important thing is worship, which is another way of saying the most important thing is God. And then missions fits underneath that. Now, so that you know this is not a John Piper thing, I want you to see this is a very much a scripture thing, even a Jesus thing. This is really just an extension of Jesus' answer when he was asked what the greatest commandment in the law was. In Matthew chapter 22, his response, starting in verse 37, was, quoting Deuteronomy, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment." And he adds, "A second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." But notice there the order of things, and I'm sure you've observed that before. When he's asked, what's the greatest moral obligation a person has before God? And he says, here it is, number one, top shelf stuff, love God. Or we could say worship. Or we could just say simply God. That is what life is about. And then he says there's a second commandment, and it's important. I mean, it has to be included in there. It's like the first one, but notice it is second. It is not first. It is not equal with first. The second commandment is you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And missions fits in that second place with that commandment. It is a way of loving others, bringing them the gospel. But at least the compassion motivation, I should say, fits in that second category. We love others. We feel a compassion for them. And we are going to talk about that compassion as a motivation. But notice it's not at the very top. The very top of our motivation in all of life, and therefore also in missions, is God himself, or we could say worship, the worship of God, our worship of God, and our desire that other people would worship God for God's sake. That is the primary driving motivation we ought to have in missions. Now, you might wonder why that matters. If you're interested in missionary work, does it matter to think through these things that carefully? You just have a sense you should go, so you're going to obey God and go. It actually really does matter. Now, I can't speak this from personal experience as a missionary because I've never been a missionary in the sense of crossing cultural boundaries, ethnic, geographic boundaries to bring the gospel there. But I have heard from more than one seasoned missionary the same idea that they went into missions excited, so excited. And the same proves true, by the way, when you read the great missionary biographies. They go into missions so excited, so enthusiastic, usually young and idealistic and driven, which is good. And they get to the mission field and it is hard. It is so hard. And there are so many disappointments, so many confusing and difficult things happen. You go there to bring the gospel to the lost, and the Christian workers, the missionaries, they can't even get along. You say, what are we doing? We can't even get along, and there are fallouts with other believers, even when there's only five of you in a whole city. Or you go and you see no converts For example, like what William Carey experienced, of course, today we consider him the father of modern missions, but when you read his story, you realize it was laden with disappointments. I mean, there were pastors, well-intentioned pastors, telling Carey, do not go. Not just one, but a number of them saying, God will take care of the heathen. He will take care of those in India who haven't heard. You don't need to be going through the trouble to go there. He goes against all their counsel, and then everything goes wrong. Yeah. Which seems like they were right, because look, everything's going wrong with other believers. He doesn't see a convert for the first 6 years. It's not till the seventh year he even begins to see any converts to Christianity in India. And so if his whole motivation in going was because he felt compassion for those in India, and he wanted them to know Christ for their sake, so they could escape judgment. Now, that certainly was a motivation for him. But if that was his entire motivation, those would be six very, very hard years. And the seventh year and the conversions were not guaranteed. Many, many missionaries have gone out with the desire to see the lost reached and have died before they saw a single convert. And if their whole motivation was to see the convert, for the convert's sake, that would be unbearably difficult. But if the motivation is worship, our own worship of God, our own love for God, doing it for God's sake, and craving that God would use our efforts so others would enter into a glorious worship of a glorious God, then there's great motivation. Things are still hard. Certainly, we still want to see converts, but there is a motivation built into that. Isaiah, of course, we hold him in such high esteem, the biblical figure. But again, if you look at his actual ministry, when he's called to be a messenger of God and proclaim God's message, in Isaiah chapter 6, he has a vision of God. It terrifies him. And God, of course, despite Isaiah's weaknesses, sins, inadequacies, God says, nope, you're the one I've chosen. All right. And then God tells him, and this is the message I want you to bring. Here it is, Isaiah chapter 6, verse 9. Go and say to this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. And so Isaiah is sent to his own people, knowing beforehand he will not be quote-unquote successful. God tells him, that's part of your message, is the fact that you will not be heard. You will not be understood. You will not be received. And so what is it that gets Isaiah motivated to serve God in that way? And of course, it was a very difficult ministry for him. It was that vision of God in his glory and the sense that God ought to be obeyed, worshiped, and enjoyed. The same thing happens if we try to take other, again, decent motivations for missions and make them primary rather than worship. So we talked about making compassion for others and wanting to see them converted primary. That will let you down. The same happens for those who are looking for adventure in missions. And I would say, with some reserve, but I would say those who desire some adventure in missions, that is not entirely a bad motivation. We will not have a podcast episode about it. It doesn't rank high. But I do think God wires some people with a desire for what is new and different and foreign and adventurous as one of the ways of encouraging them toward missions, equipping them for missions. So it's not a bad motivation in itself. But if it is the predominant motivation for a person to do missions, the problem is no matter where you go, once you are there for a while, it is no longer as adventurous as at first, because that goes away with time. You get used to it. So that cannot be a primary motivation. It can be one of them. One motivation, but worship has to be primary. The same, again, happens for those who go into missions just for the admiration it wins them with other Christians. If you are a missionary, you get a degree of respect in Christian circles, so some people may feel tempted to move toward missions for that reason. But again, that will be tested. What happens when you go into missions for that reason, and then you're forgotten? And people at home basically forget about you in their busy lives, and you are out there all on your own. That will be difficult, or people come to disagree with you, even other missionaries, and you lose that admiration. So all this to point out, does it matter to keep our focus on the very most fundamental motivation for missions? Yes, it very much does. Every other motivation has its limit and will fail. This is the one motivation strong enough to survive, and it's the one God wants us to keep at the forefront, whether we are supporting missionaries with our prayers and financially and otherwise, or we're going as missionaries. This is number one. We want God glorified. We want Him worshiped. That's what life is about, and missions is one significant way that we see that happen. If you go to missions, into missions for God's glory, you can persevere when there's few results because God's glorified even by the efforts themselves. You can persevere when the adventure fades because there is a kind of adventure in glorifying God. You can persevere when that admiration of others fades because you are focused on God being admired rather than yourself. So again, maybe in the past you had not thought much through our motivations for missions. Maybe you thought it's a noble thing, but you did not have worship up at the top of the list of motivations, either in you sending others and supporting them or in going yourself. Whatever the case in the past might have been, may God help us all now to think this way.